Canto 5, chapter 15. Yes, is it? Text number 10. Yeah, 10 is it? Okay. Yam Abhyashicharam Paraya Mudha Sati Satya Ashisha Dakshatanya Shariti Yasya Prajnanam Dududhe Dara Ashishaha Nirashishaha Gunavatsaha Snutta Udaha. Yabhagasi Jinparayamuta Sadi Sadyashisho Daksha Kanya Sharidhi Yasya Pragyanam Durudhe Dharashisho Nirashisho Bruna Vatsa Snuto Daha Yam Abhyasi Charam Palaya Mudha Sati Satyashisho Daksha Kanya Sharidbihi Yasya Pragyanam Durudhe Dharashisho Nirashisho Bruna Vatsa Stuto Daha Yam Abhyasatinam Yab Abhyasin Chan Paraya Mudho Satihi Satyashisho Daksha Kanya Sharidbihi Yasya Pragyanam Durudhe Dharashisho Nirashisho Guna Vatsa Stuto Daha Bala
Yes, yeah.
Any ladies like to chant, please? No? Okay. You should chant, ladies, because otherwise who's going to give the example to my granddaughters? This whole text today is about setting examples. So brahmacharis have to set examples, sannyasis have to set examples, grihasthas have to set examples, ladies have to set examples. So word meaning, yam hum abhyasichan, bathed, padaya, with great, muda, satisfaction, sati, all chaste and devoted to their husbands, satya, true, ashishaha, whose blessings, dakshakanyaha, the daughters of King Daksha, shadibhi, with sanctified water, yasya, whose, prajnanam, of the citizens, dududhe, fulfilled, dara, the planet earth, ashishaha, of all desires, nirashishaha, although personally having no desire, gunavatsa snuta udaha, earth becoming like a cow, whose udders flowed upon sea, Gaia's qualities in ruling over the citizens. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. All the chaste and honest daughters of Maharaj Daksha, such as Shraddha, Maitri, and Dayana, whose blessings were always effective, bathed Maharaj Gaya with sanctified water. Indeed, they were very satisfied with Maharaj Gaya. The planet Earth personified came as a cow, and as though she saw her calf, she delivered milk profusely when she saw all the good qualities of Maharaj Gaya. In other words, Maharaj Gaya was able to derive all benefits from the earth and thus satisfied the desires of his citizens. However, he personally had no desire. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The earth over which Maharaj Gaya ruled is compared to a cow. The good qualities whereby he maintained and ruled the citizens are compared to the calf. A cow delivers milk in the presence of her calf. Similarly, the cow, or earth, fulfilled the desires of Maharaj Gaya, who was able to utilize all the resources of the earth to benefit his citizens. This was possible because he was bathed in sanctified water by the honest daughters of Daksha. Unless a king or ruler is blessed by authorities, he cannot rule the citizens very satisfactorily. Through the good qualities of the ruler, the citizens become very happy and well qualified. Omiganatam yandashajanan anjana shalakaya chakshur umminitamina tasmai shri gurve maha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Buddhale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapanantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Giradhar Shivasani Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So here we're reading about Maharaj Gaya in the chapter entitled The Descendants of King Priyavrata. Several verses are describing him as a great devotee and also a representative of the Lord, who ruled in a very pious way over his citizens And thus the citizens were very happy, and the earth provided all good resources necessary for people to be maintained properly. So this is one of several places in the Bhagavatam, many places where there's a history given of different kings, of the lineages of the earth, and sometimes of other planets, sometimes descriptions of kings of the whole universe, or sections of the universe. So here, it's just a few verses, but it's describing King Gaya, and another example of a pious king. And specifically it recommends that he was very qualified because he used all of the earth's resources to benefit his citizens. One of the specific things is pointed out. Why was he a good ruler? Because he used everything to benefit the citizens. Secondly, it says that he was able to rule because he was blessed by authorities. So he had the blessings of higher authorities, and because of that he was able to rule properly. And then it also specifically mentions that because he had all good qualities, he was able to make the citizens happy. So, generally these days, people in positions of leadership or political rulers, they may claim they have some blessings of higher authorities, but they just do that to kind of make a show. Like where I live in America, they always end their speeches with, "May God bless America." But they never talk about, well, do we need to do anything to be sure that God blesses America? That question they never ask. They just throw it out. God bless America. This way the religious people think, oh, he's good. He mentioned God. And other people think, oh, he's good. He only mentioned God one time. So this way they try to appease everybody. But actually, the Bhagavatam is expressing to us this whole different cosmology, this whole different understanding of how things work in this world, that without the blessings of higher authorities, including political leaders need the blessings of higher authorities, one actually can't live a good, productive and successful life. So therefore, so many histories are given for our benefit of these kings to give us good instructions and also to help us understand what does it mean to be a qualified ruler, a qualified leader. So there's many places in the Bhagavatam and elsewhere in the Vedic literature that it describes the importance of having good kings and good rulers. You know, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, whatever a great man does, whatever a powerful person does, other people follow. And we see that in the modern society, especially they don't really know who great people are. So oftentimes they substitute, we would say great means particularly spiritual greatness, but they substitute other things. So people follow the examples of someone who's very rich. Even if he's a total low-class person, if he's rich, people want to follow his example. Or somebody's famous, they want to follow his example, right? You all live in Mumbai, that's a famous home of Bollywood. So right, there's Bollywood, there's Hollywood. These are the practically the world's most famous people. Oftentimes they live the most degraded lives. But everybody listens to them and wants to follow them, and they all want to know the Bollywood Kathak or the Hollywood Kathak. And again, sometimes it's the most degraded lifestyles, but somehow they find some interest in these things. So people want to follow powerful people, great people, but they don't know who to follow. So the Bhagavatam is giving us those positive examples. We hear about, you know, we have the histories of Grandfather Bhishma and how even in ordinary things, in order to please his authority, in order to please his father, he took a vow for life of celibacy. And even later when the whole situation changed and the reason that he took his vow had gone, his father was passed away, his brothers, or his stepbrothers, who he took the vow to ensure they could be kings, they both had died by unfortunate circumstances. His stepmother came to him and said, "Now you have to give up this vow." He said, "No, I took a vow, I will not change this vow." So we have examples of great, great personalities like that. And of course, throughout Bhishma's life, so many other great, great things he did. He tolerated so many difficulties, and he was such a great devotee of the Lord. And Yudhisthira and Priyavrata and Bharata and so many great kings are there for us to learn from their example. And we also have in the Bhagavatam and elsewhere in the Vedic literatures stories of so many other kings that also give examples. They give examples of what not to do. So we have the examples of people like Ravana and Venu and so many others are there to teach us how to not make those same mistakes. But sadly today, and Prabhupada oftentimes in his commentaries, he brings these examples of kings into the modern context and talks about how today the world is missing pious rulers. There really aren't very many pious rulers. It's hard. There's maybe a few people, but generally rulers are not so pious. And generally we see people in political office or ruler, like the modern day kings are generally elected or some kind of dictator or something. Few kings left. But generally, they're driven by power for its own sake, unfortunately. Here, the verse is saying that a good king, he uses all the resources for the benefit of the citizens. The same way like a good father. The father, he has different resources. The mother, they have resources. They create a house, they create a home, they have money, they can buy clothes and food and things like that. A good parent, they use those resources for their children. If they don't use those resources for their children, what's it called? It's called abuse or neglect, isn't it? If you go to someone's home and the mother and father were wearing very opulent clothing and eating very good food, and the children were skinny because they're not getting good food and they're not clean and they don't have clothes and don't have a safe place to stay, that's abuse of their leadership role. So the same way, if the leaders are living very opulent lives, but they're not using whatever resources are there for the citizens or for their followers, that's abuse. The same way in the world today, we know it's a big struggle. If people in the mercantile communities, if they have the ability to build big factories and make so much money, okay, then they'll become very wealthy. But if they don't distribute some of that in a fair way to their workers, then that's abusive. The history of the 20th century, a lot of it was based on a fight between the working class and the mercantile class over the distribution of resources. Because the factory owners, the capitalist class, oftentimes, they get carried away and they tend to exploit the working class. So whether it's a capitalist with the workers, whether it's parents sometimes with their children, sometimes teachers with their students, rulers with their citizens, government politicians over the people of the state. Oftentimes in this age of Kali Yuga, people exploit their position. But the Bhagavatam gives us these examples to understand that what true leadership means. And Prabhupada's making the point here that people aren't happy if there's not good leadership. Again, where I live in America in the recent years, it's become, really, people have become disgusted with the government. They always take polls. They probably do this in India now. They ask me, what's your opinion of this policy? What do you think of the government? What do you think of this and that? So they do these surveys. They ask people, what do you think of the Congress or the Parliament? In America they call it the Congress. Right now there's something like 24% of the people, that means 1 out of 4, think they're doing an okay job. 3 out of 4 think they're doing a terrible job. So what kind of leadership is that? 3 out of 4 think they're doing a terrible job. The reason people are frustrated is because there's two parties and they seem to be fighting about their own position. Here we're understanding the king, the leader, his duty is to provide resources, make sure the citizens are happy. But in the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, as Prabhupada says, many places, oftentimes it's all about fighting for power. Whatever I have to do to stay in power, that's the goal. Let me stay in power, let me succeed. Or let me favor my own little group. And oftentimes it's very important, very unfortunate, because in order to get into power, people need a lot of money these days. Big campaigns. They spend millions and millions of dollars and rupees to get elected. You see the posters all over India. Who pays for those posters? They have to raise a lot of money. In the United States, there's one house every 2 years that they have to run. So they get elected in November. They get voted in January. 18 months later, they have to come up for election again. So the minute they get elected, they're thinking, how will I get elected again? They're not so much thinking, how will I serve the people? They may be thinking that to some extent, but in their heart, they're thinking, how do I get elected again? It's a very, very unfortunate situation. We're reading about kings, but in the age of Kali Yuga, it's more oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes, it's not so much about how to be a good king, it's about how to be king of the hill. You know that game, king of the hill? There's a hill, the goal is to be on top. And the way you get on top is you have to get there first, so everybody's pulling everybody else down. Isn't it? It's not so much how to work cooperatively so that everybody can be uplifted. This is what's being explained here. This is good leadership. To see we have a shared purpose. I was flying through on my way here just a few days ago, and I was in the baggage claim. I was looking around, and I was trying to somehow see a little Gyana Chakshu. So I was trying to understand Josh. I was seeing so many different people in the baggage claim. You know, there's businessmen, and there's mothers with their children, and there's students, and there's old people, and there's foreigners, there's tourists, and there's the people working in the baggage claim. And I was trying to see, I was really trying to see, I have a relationship with every single one of these people. It's not that, oh, you know, I've got white skin, right? So it's not that, oh, there's a couple, they look European. Oh, I should talk to them. Or that's a dark-skinned person. He's from Africa. I've never been to Africa. I don't have a connection with him. Or there's a woman with children. Well, I'm too old for that. You know? Or there's a rich man. He's too rich. I don't. I'm threatened. But no. I'm actually all of these people. Whatever their body is, they're all servants of Krishna. They're all. Each and every one of them has an eternal rasa with Krishna. And whether it's in Vaikuntha or Vrindavan or whatever their particular, they all have a relationship with Krishna. And they're all covered over by some false ego, by the gross and subtle elements. Every one of them is covered over. And because I'm covered over, I'm seeing their covering and I'm not seeing their soul. And if I'm a king or if I'm a leader, I'm supposed to see the soul, at least understand the soul, at least treat them like the soul, and not treat them like the body. Because if I see them as the body, I see them as friends or foes. I see, oh, this is my party. They'll help me have power. I'll do some favors for you. I'll pass some laws, give you beneficial taxes. I'll invite you to big, big parties. You can stand in line, have your picture taken with me. And this way, I'll favor you. But, oh, this one, he's a threat. He threatens my power. Yeah, this is material consciousness, right? What Prahlad told his father, you're seeing everything in terms of friends and enemies. That's ignorance. You have no enemy, father. What did he tell him? You have one enemy, only. Who's his enemy? We all have the same enemy, too. We have the same friend, we have the same source, we have the same Lord, we have the same enemy. My mind. That's our enemy. So, but because there's so much ignorance in the world, people are thinking in leadership roles, in contrast to King Gaya, they're thinking King of the Hill. Where I live in Washington, D.C., many, many people come to tour the city. And there's big monuments. Of course, it's the seat of government, so people come to see how's the government running. Here's where the president lives. Here's where they pass the laws. There's many monuments to past leaders. You know, there was, you know, some war that was won that, you know, people made sacrifices and they come and they get inspired by them. There's some good things there, some monuments to some good people. But as a reflection of Kali Yuga, they have different tours. You can take a tour of the monument. You can go by yourself or you pay. They'll take you a tour of the monuments. You can take a tour of the museums. They have a new tour, started about 15, maybe 20 years ago. It's called the Scandal Tour. It's true, you can come to Washington, D.C., you can pay $30, you can take the Scandal Tour. They'll take you to all the most important places where the scandals occurred. It's true. They'll take you to this building. They'll say, this is where President Nixon paid his people to break into the office of the other political party to steal some documents that led to his total loss of power. You can go to another place. Crazy Kali Yuga. They'll say, this is the place where one old senator, 70 years old, he was driving with some young woman of not good quality, and the police pulled him over because he was drunk. So when the police pulled him over, the young woman didn't want to embarrass the senator, so she jumped out of the car and jumped in the river, thinking this would solve their problem. So his career was destroyed. And you can go to some other place. This one was caught stealing this, this one did this. So people come to see the scandal tour. They think that's very funny. For entertainment, see the scandal tour. But actually, it's funny, but it's not funny. It's sad. It's very, very sad. Because people need good examples. That's why the Bhagavatam is there. It's giving us examples. We read these examples, and we think, yes, let me stand by my vow. At least try to, like Bhishma stood by his vow. And let me be prepared to do whatever is necessary to please my guru and to please Krishna the way Arjuna was so determined. Whether there's loss or whether there's success, let me be determined the way Arjuna was determined. So many examples are there. And let me not be like Dhritarashtra, who was so overcome with his selfish desires. Let me resist those kind of temptations. So why do we read about these? We're not being trained to be kings. Prabhupada said, you know, our society is meant to train Vaishnavas, meant to train the Brahminical class of people first and foremost. So why do we read these things? Sometimes we read these things and then we just go, oh, okay, that's what a king is. And then we turn around and criticize and chastise or curse all the other modern leaders. That's really not what I'm trying to do here. I really don't want to just curse them or belittle them. But why do we want to study this? Why is it in the Bhagavatam? It's there for kings to read, but it's more importantly, it's for us to read. Because we also, we're leaders. Some of us are GBC members, some of us are temple presidents, some of us are ashram leaders, some of us are mothers, some of us are fathers, some of us are teachers, some of us give lectures, some of us supervise other devotees in the temple, or some of us are bosses in our companies. Some of us stand at the counter and give people books. We're all leaders. The day you walk into ISKCON movement, the first day you've taken on a leadership role. Because the minute you put out some tilak or you identify yourself with ISKCON and someone comes to visit the temple and says, what's this all about? Immediately we've taken on a position of spiritual leadership. Because they're inquiring from you. Even if they just say, where's the deities? Or where do I get prasadam? They are inquiring submissively. And if we say, over there you fool, then we've very much damaged their spiritual life. And if we say, oh, is this your first time here? Let me help you. My name is Anutama or Krishnadas or Sitadasi, whatever our name might be. Let me show you. Let me take you to the temple. So glad you're here. Thank you for coming. Make sure you stop at the book table. Make sure you go to the restaurant. That's leadership. It's giving shelter. It's described here. The king, he helped make the citizens happy. So sometimes we tend to think, when we read these things, yes, those political leaders, they're all rascals. They don't care about the benefit of the citizens. They're all worried about their own selves. They're not able to discipline themselves and sacrifice for others. But then we turn around with the people who are, in a sense, our citizens or people we're caring for, whether it's for a year or for a moment or for a lifetime. If you have children, you care for them a lifetime. Someone walks in the door of the temple, it's just a moment. But we're also meant to care for them. So we're meant to set, as a broader society, as an ISKCON society, and also as individuals, We're meant to help set examples for political leaders, for academic leaders, for business leaders. Business leaders, they're driven by this urge to make money. That's a good skill. But we're meant to help give them an example and teach them how they'll only be happy by using their money for Krishna. And to try to encourage political leaders, yes, if you live in a God-centered way, then actually you can be happy and you can do something beneficial. So what are the examples that we're meant to gain out of this? Well, a few things. First of all, the need to lead a disciplined life. That means everyone makes choices. So the king here, we're reading Maharaj Gaya, he desired everything for the citizens, but he had very little desire for himself. Of course, we may not be at that platform, but we should at least endeavor. Yoga means controlling the mind and the senses. We should endeavor to try to simplify our desires, to lead disciplined lives. That's what Prabhupada's given us such nice sadhana, to help us become strong, self-controlled, so that we will not indulge our senses, but that we can use our energy for higher purposes. That's something we all are meant to do. We're all meant to teach that example. We're also meant to teach an example, and we do, but we need to be careful of how to focus one's life on serving God. These days, practically, in India a little bit less, but it's there too. You know, if you tell someone you're using your life to serve God, they look at you like, what's wrong? Why would you do that? And why do you even believe in God and so many things? But when they see spiritual people, when they see devotees, it plants a little seed of doubt in their mind. Because they think, well, he doesn't seem so crazy. Or this lady seems like a nice person. Her kids seem pretty well-rounded and happy. But how is it they're doing this all for God? So it sets an example, really. And it makes people question themselves, because they're bombarded with propaganda day in and day out, and it's getting worse and worse and worse and more degrading propaganda. When I landed here, the ride was late, so I was standing in the entranceway, and you know, there's two television sets blasting at you. It's outside in the courtyard where the taxis drive up. And there was one TV. It had some spiritual leader, I don't know what it was, but it looked like Indra. Ganesh was there, you could tell Ganesh. And some other people said, okay, well this is something from what, Mahabharata or something. Couldn't tell. And there were no subtitles. But it was something out of Indian theological content. Then there was another TV with just some crazy show from the West that had subtitles. So of course I was trying to watch, I was trying to look for my ride, but I'd look up occasionally, because right, so I'd look at this and then I'd look at that with the subtitles. And the contrast was so stark, it was so sharp, the contrast, because here was some pious thing, and you know, some devas are there, and some message is there. But over here was, you know, the beautiful woman and the powerful man and the fast moving car and the explosions and the bullets going off. And you know, the mind tends to go where those things are. And it becomes affected and infected. So people's minds, they're affected and infected by all this energy that's there. Where do they look for some alternative? Who's going to give them the alternative? That's part of our job, to offer them that alternative. And to be able to teach people that by knowing ourselves that real happiness and success, it doesn't come from more and more power, it doesn't come from more and more money, it doesn't come from more and more beauty, but it comes from a spiritual experience. So we understand, we should try to understand that we are disturbed at the modern state of leadership generally in human society. But we also know those leaders themselves, they're victims. A lot of criminals, why they're criminals? Because that's what they were brought up in. Their father was a criminal. Or they were exploited when they were children. They were cheated or hurt, injured in some way. So the only example they have are bad ones. Or they're so angry or bitter or frustrated or disappointed in life that they take it out at others. So they're also victims. People in these positions, they're victims. So therefore, they're also taught. Just accumulate more and more power, more and more money, you'll be happy. I often quote this interview with Rockefeller, the very first John D. Rockefeller, first one, very, very, very wealthy family. One point in time, they controlled all the oil and the gas and the distribution and everything in the oil industry in America. The government had to kind of break it up. It was a big monopoly. But they asked this man, John D. Rockefeller, one time when he was older, fabulously wealthy, like Bill Gates times two or three. They asked him, how much money is enough? And he thought about it for a minute and he said, just a little bit more. So that's the nature of this world. How much money is enough? Well, you just need a little bit more. So no matter how much you have, I just need a little more, just a little more, just a little more. So people are being cheated by that. The leaders have been cheated themselves. Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita, one purport, he says, the so-called happiness in material life is the enemy of the soul. The so-called happiness is the enemy because it makes us forget Krishna more and more. It makes us think we can be happy here without Him. So people need examples. They're cheated by so many misrepresentations and becoming so cynical. So Prabhupada said, therefore, that his society, ISKCON, is meant to create men and women of good character and to teach others a process and to give them faith in the process of cleaning the heart. And that's what it's all about, our being devotees, and that's why we read these histories of these great personalities like Maharaj Gaya, who was able to, by his pious leadership, the earth planet itself was providing more for people. There's a reciprocal relationship between humanity and nature. You know, these days people are saying, in the United States now, they just announced the temperature in the United States last year was 3 degrees above average. They're totally in shock because they're worried about this global warming and the waters rising and more hurricanes coming and more floods and more fires. You know, the temperature is supposed to stay the same. But something like in the last 20 years, they've had the hottest 10 or 15 years of the last 200 years have all been in the last decade or so. So they're starting to say it's getting hotter. What do we do? So they're starting to understand there's some reciprocal. The way we live affects the earth, and the earth affects us. They don't understand all of the subtleties that explained here, but they're starting to understand more. So when we read these stories and we hear about kings like Gaya and other great personalities, we should try to really meditate on them as examples to follow. And they should give us strength in terms of our own struggles in spiritual life. And they should give us some wisdom in how we can respond to our own complexities. You know, we see Gaya, it's just not much information is given, but he took shelter of spiritual authorities. And by doing that, he gained strength. And he was concerned about the well-being of others. Because of that, he was successful. And he wasn't concerned about his own well-being. And because of that, he received so many blessings. And he himself was so happy. So we should all try to pray to Krishna and our own gurus to give us strength and to give us wisdom and also compassion that we can also act in a proper way as leaders, as kings. We're little kings. We're devotee kings. We're not kings enjoyers, but we're servants and we're leaders. We have leadership roles. To try to set a good example from others, but not in a proud way. We know, like with Venu and some of these other kings that lost their way, they became proud. In English, there's an expression, pride comes before the fall. When we become proud, then we're destined. Then the fall will come. When we're humble, then we can achieve so much success because we do it with Krishna's blessings. But if we become proud and we start thinking that we're the doer, well then, it's impossible to be successful because Krishna's created this world to teach us that we're servants. So he's going to lead us in our lives to that proper understanding. So if we forget who's in control, well, he'll have to show us who's in control, isn't it? And if we remember that he's the master and he's the enjoyer, then he will allow us to experience his being the leader and being the enjoyer and being the controller more and more and more. But if we want to be in ignorance, he'll keep us in ignorance. It's our choice. So we're learning these histories of these great personalities. If we follow in the footsteps, we'll also be successful. And we should also know, too, that sometimes we may have kind of a superficial reading of these great personalities. Like Gaia, it's a brief story. I don't think it tells much about his challenges. But we do know that in this world, we all have some good credits. We all carry some bad credits. We all have some good qualities. We all have some not so good qualities. But we also know, Krishna's explained to us, and the acharyas are explaining to us and showing us by their example, that by the process of devotional service, we can awaken our original spiritual qualities, and we can kind of put to sleep whatever negative materialistic qualities are there. That's what devotional service is all about. So in the process, we also will make mistakes. We should not be frustrated or become overly disappointed with ourselves. When we make mistakes, or when we fall short of the instructions that are given, we have the one enemy is the mind, but also we have the six enemies, right? I was trying to remember the six. Anger, lust, greed, envy, right? Pride, thank you, and ignorance, illusion. Sometimes in the Western traditions they use the word sloth, which means like laziness, ignorance. So illusion is, I think, the parallel. So that sometimes we're lazy. We don't really want to put ourselves forward for a spiritual practice. Sometimes we all become angry without just cause. Sometimes we're envious. We feel. Sometimes my sense is it's like a wave. It's like if you go in the ocean, a wave comes and then it goes away. And then a few seconds later, another wave comes and it goes away. Sometimes I feel like a wave of envy. It just, my whole being feels affected by envy. And then later, a minute later, or a second later, or a week later, it's like a whole wave of anger. Hey, where did this come from? Well, it's deep in my heart from some of my past sins and offenses. But if I go on practicing Krishna consciousness, those things become quieter and quieter. And sometimes they get very, 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 very quiet. And then a tsunami comes. Lust, envy, greed, all at once. But Prabhupada said if we remain sincere, if we take shelter of the instructions of our acharyas, Krishna will help us and he'll purify us within and without. And through the process of devotional service and through associating with devotees, and we'll become more and more pure. We'll gradually reawaken knowledge and actual experience of who we are, what's our relationship with Krishna. We'll become free from the desire to exploit others. We'll actually genuinely develop a desire to serve others and help reconnect them with Krishna. And as Prabhupada says, many places we'll become joyful. Because if we're actually understanding, I'm not this body, it's just some temporary trouble. If we're actually understanding, like all these beautiful paintings here, and of course the deities here, if we're actually understanding and believing and realizing that I have a personal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, out of whose expansion universes come from the pores of his body, he's so inconceivably great, but yet he wants and has and is trying to reawaken a relationship with tiny, tiny me. You know, it's kind of like if we're sitting on the floor and some ant walks across your ankle. You know, materialistic people sometimes just go like that, you know? Devotees, sometimes we just brush them aside. But in Krishna's mind, that ant is an intimate servant of His. That's like, you know, He's, of course, He's much greater. The comparison between us and an ant is not as big as between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and one little tiny soul. But still, by His greatness, His qualities, His nature, He actually wants a relationship with us. And the only thing that's preventing it is our desire. He's there in our heart, right? The Upanishads explain there's two birds in the tree. He's just watching us, waiting, okay? Whenever you're ready, I'm here. The only thing that separates us is our desire. And our desires are up here because of so many years of contamination, so many things. So that's why, just like with our japa, we bring it back to Krishna, and then it goes away. We bring it back to Krishna. And gradually becomes fixed. So He's there, He's in our heart, He's helping us. And He only asks, while we're here, trying to reconnect with Him, that we fulfill His most cherished desire. And what's His most cherished desire? That other people can come back to Him. So He says, while you're reconnecting with Me, while you're reawakening with Me, while you're building temples and distributing books, and purifying holy rivers, and serving the mission of the Acharyas, please engage others. Please give others the opportunity. Because as much as He wants us to be happy, He wants them to be happy. He wants every one of those people in the baggage claim where I was the other day to be happy. He wants every one of those crazy people driving on the road, beeping their horns in anxiety because they're late for work and they're worried, I might make 2 less rupees or 2 less crores or whatever. What they're not really understanding is they've just lost 2 more minutes that they could be connecting with Krishna. But He wants them all to be happy. He wants the misled kings and the pious kings. He wants the saintly rishis and He wants the demons. He wants everybody to come back to Him. So that's His merciful position. And we're giving these examples of how we can follow the footsteps of great personalities. And by Prabhupada's mercy, He's given us access to the Bhagavatam and association with devotees and the process of devotional service. So we're very, very fortunate. Now we just have to take advantage. Don't waste the great mercy given to us by Srila Prabhupada and all of His representatives. So I'll stop there. Thank you very much for your attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So there's a couple minutes if there's 1 or 2 questions perhaps. Actually, I saw him first. Sorry, but you too. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
It's not working. I think he's turning around.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
It's on. Hare Krishna. Prabhu, the question is to an extent in context with the lecture today, maybe slightly different, but you are a person who can answer it, I'm sure. Prabhu, in ISKCON, here, at least in India, I found lot many leaders and lot many important personalities, they come in.
A lot of fallen personalities come in. Is that what you said?
No, lot many celebrated personalities or leaders, they come in.
Okay.
Now, when
I've seen hundreds.
I'm talking.
Can't you see them all?
No, these are divine personalities. I'm talking from the social perspective.
Okay.
So there are two scope, or there are two needs at that point of time, especially when these leaders come, political leaders come. One is that there's a need to maintain good relationship with them so that the immediate objectives of the temple and of the organization of the movement, they're fulfilled, taking permissions and, you know, making them favorable and these kind of things. For which, you know, giving them a garland or some prasadam or, you know, some sort of flattering is also quite helpful and sufficient. And the other need is to take him beyond that and, you know, take some risks and give him, you know, little bit deeper into the philosophy. Of course, in a loving way, in a courteous way. We don't have to be abrupt, arrogant for that. But then it involves some bit of a risk. Also a risk that our immediate objective can be, you know, at stake. So, in such circumstances, what is to be done? I mean,
what is to be done in interacting with important people of this world.
Yeah, and what objective should be kept into account? The immediate objective of the organization of the temple, or the deeper objectives?
The objective is always the same. And if people feel that's our legitimate objective, then other objectives will also be achieved. The objective primarily should be, if you look at Prabhupada's interview when he would meet reporters or big professors or priests or, you know, race car drivers or whatever, Prabhupada's first and foremost concern was with their spiritual life. Sometimes reporters would ask stupid questions and Prabhupada would, you know, come back and say, what are you doing with your life? You know, and they would be shocked because they're supposed to ask questions and write a story. But, you know, Prabhupada was genuinely concerned with them. There's a story they tell in London. There was one man, I don't remember his name, was a famous race car driver. And he came to see Prabhupada. I don't know why he came to see Prabhupada. The devotees brought him. And they say for 2 or 3 hours, Prabhupada just talked to him about race cars. Devotees were shocked. They didn't know Prabhupada knew much about race cars. I don't think it was recorded. I never heard a recording. But somehow Prabhupada understood this is how to connect with this person. Otherwise, why would he waste his time? There's a wonderful story Ravindra Sirpugu tells that I like to tell in a communications course I teach sometimes. In the States, I think it was in the city of Philadelphia, I'm not sure, the devotees said one of their first homes was kind of two houses connected. There was a little old lady living next door. Prabhupada went out in the morning for his morning walk. He walked out the door. He turned left on the sidewalk and turned left again right back up to see the little old lady on the porch. And the young devotees are probably about all average 18 years old in those days. They wanted to see what's Prabhupada going to tell to preach to this old lady. And as Ravindra Sarupa says, the Prabhupada talk, old people talk. How many grandchildren do you have? Do you have all your teeth? I have mine. And devotees were like in complete shock. And Ravindra used that term, old people talk. Because Prabhupada was connecting with her as a soul where she was able to be connected. You know, and perhaps she's got these young crazy people next door beating drums at 4 o'clock in the morning and who knows what. You know, probably telling her you're not that body and you should, you know, shave your head or whatever they're telling her. But, you know, Prabhupada connected. So first and foremost, he was concerned with her as her spiritual growth. So, if that's our underlying motivation, just like when we go on book distribution, if somebody feels you care about them, they'll take a book 10 times more easily than you can have, you know, the best mantras in the world and you can, you know, look so good and talk so nice. But if they feel you care about them, they'll take a book because they'll think this person cares about me. So the same thing, whether a person's a big person, a little person, if they think we care, then they'll be attracted. That's why Prabhupada could, in the same day, talk to some hippies and, you know, talk to, you know, the people from the United Nations. He did that sometimes. And he would go and meet some brand new disciple in France and then he'd go, you know, meet the mayor within a moment. How could he do that? Because his mission was the same with every single person. Now once we've made that connection, you know, we'd like to encourage those people to, as Maharaj Gaya, engage your resources in the service of the Lord. Not so that I can say I made a rich person a member, or not so I can say I made an influential person, you know, fulfill the mission according because of me, but because we know it's best for them and it's best for the world. And if they really feel that, then they'll be moved in their heart. And if we're not so sincere, they won't be so moved. So that's the main thing. Is that okay?
Thank you, Guru.
Okay, and then one last one.
Hare Krishna, the volume of devotional service and the attitudes behind those service, both will be considered by Krishna for carrying forward. As we say that devotional service is permanent, whatever you do is carried forward and not destroyed, that remains. So suppose some devotional services are done with the motives like pride, arrogance and negative qualities, will those services be also counted?
Yeah, everything is counted. I mean, there's so many stories. Remember the one story we hear about the sadhu was going door to door and there was a very envious household and he thought, I'm so tired of these people coming and bothering me. So he thought, I'll play a trick. So the sadhu came with his cloth and said, please give me some alms. He said, wait here. And he went to the back of the house. He took a bucket with ashes from the fire. He went back to the sadhu who was holding his cloth and he threw the ashes all over him. And then he stood to watch the fun, to see how upset he'll be. And the sadhu looked and he said, thank you very much. And he was shocked. Oh, well, thank you. Why are you thanking me? Don't you see what I just did? Are you a fool? He said, no. He said, I'm a humble sadhu. I'm going door to door begging alms, ultimately on behalf of the Lord. And you've taken so much trouble. You went all the way to the back of the house. You got a bucket of ashes. You carried it all the way to the front of the house and you gave it to me. So in this way you've made some small contribution and your spiritual life has begun. So there's so many stories and histories and traditions all over the world. You know, someone comes and ultimately, the pauper who has not much and gives one paisa in devotion, it's much greater than the rich person who gives something of not much meaning. But each of them has benefit. So if we do some service and our heart isn't very pure, it won't be as effective, but there's always a positive effect. You know, and that term is arigato sukhiti. Sometimes people perform devotional service, they don't even know what they're doing. Even inadvertently, they make benefit. So in that way, we can encourage everybody to do some devotional service. And at the same time, for ourselves, we should try to evoke a spirit of devotion. You know, when we're in Mangalartik and we find we're kind of, our body's here, but our mind is still in the ashram, in the sleeping bag, or it's on the other side of the ocean, you know, we should try to bring it back. You know, when we're honoring prasada, you know, if it's just our tongue is saying, eat more and more and more, okay, there's still benefit. We distribute prasadam all over the world and people have no idea what it is. They get benefit just by eating. But if we do that in a meditative mood, thank you, Krishna, for this mercy. Please let it strengthen me in your service. You've tasted this. Who am I to honor your prasadam? Then there's more benefit. Why? Because ultimately Krishna's conscious. He's aware. He's seen what's our mood. And ultimately it's about our consciousness and our relationship. Okay? So I'll stop there. It's a few minutes after. Thank you very, very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Radha Rasa Vihari ki jai.